Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, we'll just continue. How about that? Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text Number 13. Ato maha bhagavavan amogadrik shuchi shravan satyarato dritak vritaha arukramasya khila bandha muktaye samadhina nusmaraya tadvicheshtitam. O Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Narada, that's really... Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. And thus, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. People in general have a taste for literatures by instinct. They want to hear and read from the authorities something about the unknown. But their taste is exploited by unfortunate literatures, which are full of subject matters for satisfaction of the material senses. Such literatures contain different kinds of mundane poems and philosophical speculations, more or less under the influence of Maya, ending in sense gratification. These literatures, although worthless in the true sense of the term, are variously decorated to attract the attention of the less intelligent man. Thus, the attracted living entities are more or less entangled in material bondage without hope of liberation for thousands and thousands of generations. The Narada Rishi, being the best amongst the Vaishnavas, is compassionate towards such unfortunate victims of worthless literatures. And thus, he advises Sri Vyasadeva to compose transcendental literature, which is not only attractive, but can actually bring liberation from all kinds of bondage. Vyasadeva, or his representatives, are qualified because they are rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Srila Vyasadeva and his representatives are pure in thought due to their spiritual enlightenment, fixed in their vows due to their devotional service, and determined to deliver the fallen souls rotting in material activities. The fallen souls are very eager to receive novel informations every day. And the transcendentalists, like Vyasadeva or Narada, can supply such eager people in general with unlimited news from the spiritual world. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the material world is only a part of the whole creation, and that this earth is only a fragment of the whole material world. This section of the Bhagavatam is very important. It's laying out why the Srimad Bhagavatam is being offered and how it appeared. Just like we observe Krishna Janmashtami, as that commemorates when Krishna appeared. And when we hear the pastimes of Krishna appearing, it's very wonderful. How did Krishna appear? Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appear? Or how did Srimati Radharani appear? How did Govardhan Hill appear? There's very wonderful mysteries. transcendental leelas of the Lord or his associates in making their appearance. How did Srimad Bhagavatam appear? That's one of the questions that the sages asked Sutta. So he's explaining, here's how it appeared. Narada instructed Vyas, make Srimad Bhagavatam appear. You can do it. Make Srimad Bhagavatam appear doesn't mean like from nothing. The rabbit that's pulled out of the hat existed before he pulled it out of the hat. Before Srimad Bhagavatam appears, the Bhagavatam exists eternally. It's the glories of the personality of Godhead. One of the doubts of those who say Rig Sama and Yajurveda, they're the only Vedas, because how can you have something that's eternal describing history? Because history is within time, and eternal is beyond time. So, obviously, it's not eternal. Obvious to them. But obvious to us is Krishna is eternal. And Krishna's pastimes are eternal. They're eternally going on. And they appear to us as if they're past, present, and future, but actually they're eternally going on. Prabhupada gives the example of the rising of the sun. Before the sun rises, it's not that the sun doesn't exist. And then the sun rises. Then we can see the sun. And then the sun sets and we can't see the sun. But the sun exists whether we can see it or can't see it, whether it's progressed at 10:20, it was still light out. Woke up in the morning, it was light out. We didn't even see the absence of the sun. But the other time of the year, it's dark. So, because we cannot see Krishna's pastimes, it doesn't mean they're not eternal. They're eternal. They're eternally going on. One of the things that I personally appreciate about pastimes of Krishna at Govardhan Hill, and even particularly pastimes of Krishna at Radhakund and Shyamakund, because great devotees like Raghunath Das Goswami and Chakravarti Thakur and so on, Mother Janava, they disclosed pastimes that they experienced contemporaneously, because the pastime's eternally going on. It's not their imagination. They have no interest in imaginative story-making. They have the capacity to experience Krishna's pastimes because they're eternal. And they sometimes share them. So here the Bhagavatam is making its appearance on the strength of Narada instructing Vyas to do so. And he's describing, Vyas, you can do it. It's like the coach telling, okay, you've got the qualification. He's an empowerer. You can do it. And what are the qualifications? To be Vyasadeva or be a representative of Vyasadeva. So very important. The verse, your vision is completely perfect, your good fame is spotless, you're firm in vow and situated in truthfulness, and thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance. So he's like a warm-up for, so go and sit in trance. And he gives his own autobiography and said, I did it. This is what happened. This is what I saw. And so you do. I did. That's the way to teach. You do as I did. So in the purport, Prabhupada writes, Vila Vyasadeva or his representatives are qualified because they are rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Rightly trained to see things. How do you see things in true perspective? Well, you see things as one who sees things in true perspective sees things. That's like Bhagavad Gita. It's how Krishna sees things. Krishna is describing to Arjuna, this is how I see matter. This is how I see the living entities. This is how I see creation. This is how I see things. So, Shastra Chakshusha. See things through the eyes of Scripture. Prabhupada gives the example of eyeglasses. Without eyeglasses, persons who have bad vision can see something, but it's a blur. And with the eyeglasses, it allows you to see directly, very important, you see directly the direct experience, pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam, Krishna says in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, knowledge is intended to allow us to directly experience what Krishna experiences, seeing as Krishna sees. Not exactly that you're Krishna. Not at all that you're Krishna, but that you're seeing as Krishna sees. Through the corrective lenses, eyeglasses. The seeing is direct, but it's not possible to see direct without the corrective lenses. But the seeing is direct, nonetheless. So seeing through the eyes of Scripture, like seeing the modes of nature, or whatever, seeing according to Scripture, and seeing, and by training, one can actually see that way. Of course, training requires elevation in the modes of nature, so you can drop some of the other filters and just see transparently. But with proper training, representatives of Srila Vyasadeva are qualified because they are rightly trained to see things in true perspective. Srila Vyasadeva and his representatives are pure in thought. That would be nice to have pure thought, to be pure in thought. That's possible through their spiritual enlightenment, awakening the transcendental knowledge that's already within us. So it's like double. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has this phrase, svatat sita gyan. I like that phrase. Knowledge that's inherent within the soul. Scripture is just to awaken knowledge that's inherent within the soul. Knowledge is already there because we're part and parcel of Krishna, who is full of knowledge. So any scriptural knowledge is knowledge that we already know. That's why it's called enlightenment. Aha! Because it was already there, just locked up and covered and dusty. So remove the dust, enlightened. And then that enlightenment allows purity of thought. The sequence that's beginning and think in our natural spiritual position, with proper training through spiritual enlightenment, fixed in their vows, due to their devotional service, very important also. It's one thing to try to be fixed in vows because, well, it's just, I'm supposed to do it. But we all have experience of things we're supposed to do and we don't do because it doesn't really fix our vows. It helps. But the deeper fixing of vows is because of the relationship of service unto the one who's giving us this support or our commitment to Krishna. The loving exchange between the devotee and Krishna gives the strength that makes vows possible to follow, and that invariably followed. And determination to deliver the fallen souls rotting in material activities. And again, this is because of the relationship with Krishna, who also wants that, or Narada, who wants that, or Vyasadeva, who wants that, or the representatives of Narada and Vyasadeva, who want that. So it becomes our desire because it's their desire. Because the relationship of devotional service. Narada is wanting Vyas to scribe spotless literature because you have the capacity to do so. Bhagavatam's about to appear. Where are we going? Sure, I guess.
You're in Chennai. What is it?
All you and Kalakant is about to program and he'll train you. Well, one of my favorite Prabhupada statements Prabhupada was asked by a reporter once, Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada's instant reply was less than a moment. And in that less than a moment, two things. Let go of all sense gratification and all tendency for mental speculation. Because living entities are very attached to these things, therefore the process is gradual. Sankalpa vikalpa. Tension of accepting the shelter, exclusive shelter of Krishna, wanting that pure, unfiltered, unmixed, unadulterated relationship with Krishna is the impetus to carry us to that pure thought. That's because devotional service, the strength of devotional service, allows for pure thought. And on the flip side of the pan scale is, well, I've got a little attachment over here, but maybe I can make it. It's still kind of like, you know, inch along, making a little progress. So it's Krishna accepts that offering, but is also inviting us, encouraging us, reminding us again and again to go to pure devotional service. And capacity is there, the force is there, the strength is there. We actually keep moving. As long as we keep moving, we'll get there.
Talk about the self, arts and sciences. Arts tend to be things that are talents, such as music or painting, brought out. Whereas science is more of an intellectual. I think Krishna consciousness is a science, and yet what you describe is more like an art.
Well, the frame of this, I've never heard this exact description before of education. There are these two departments, the right brain and the left brain departments. Spiritually, it's a science. In this sense, it's a science. Prabhupada explains that it's one who takes it up will experience the result. As in, that's the scientific method. Experiment, observation, conclusion. And so it is a science. Because we're souls, and because Krishna is God, and we have a relationship with Him, we follow that process, and it awakens science in that sense. So now, with the context of your question, there's technique, and let's say a chemistry laboratory experiment, there's a certain technique. Having that training, you know, when you're titrating, slowly, and at a certain point, boom, the whole thing transforms because a certain threshold is reached. So you must follow the technique, otherwise you won't get the observation. So that's the science is also there in the technique, the techniques of devotion. But the essence of devotion is not the technique. It's just there's something that is needed because intrinsically we are part of Krishna. And the entanglement is such, our attachments are such that there are techniques that help. But the essence is not the technique. The essence is the relationship that's existing with Krishna. That helps us.
In the continuation of this purport, there are thousands and thousands of literary men all over the world. And they have created many, many thousands of literary works for the information of the people in general for thousands and thousands of years. Unfortunately, none of them have brought
shanti,
peace. Yes. And tranquility on the earth. This is due to a spiritual vacuum in those literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures, especially the Bhagavad Gita and
Srimad Bhagavatam,
are specifically recommended to suffering humanity to bring about the desired effect of
shanti,
happiness,
enlightenment. peace and tranquility.
Bhakti
Maharaj's loving consciousness.
Bring about the desired effect of liberation from the pangs of material civilization, which is eating the vital part of human energy. The Bhagavad Gita is the spoken message of the Lord Himself, recorded by Vyasadeva, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental narration of the activities of Lord Krishna, which alone can satisfy the hankering desires of the living being for eternal peace and liberation from miseries. Hare Krishna. So what is highlighted here by Srila Prabhupada in this section of the purport is the two books that are very dear to members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Two forms of Krishna Katha. One is where Krishna's doing the Katha, and the other one where the Katha is about Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is God speaking directly. Srimad Bhagavatam is everybody talking about him. And both are good. Both are equal, you can say. Although one might be more important, and what kind of singles out the Hare Krishna movement from other, let's say, Hindu traditions is the Srimad Bhagavatam, because Srila Vyasadeva is becoming enlightened and empowered by his Guru Narada Muni to tell that which has not been told before. You know, stuff about God, like really detailed, nitty-gritty material about the Absolute that has not really been expressed in the way that we as it has been delivered to us in the form of a book, like written down. Vyasadeva had that arrangement. Ganesh, our friendly elephant, he became the scribe for these literatures, and although the information may have been out there somewhere for some people, it was not available for the masses. Though it came to us, and especially for those of us who are in the Krishna consciousness movement, the literatures are revolutionary. There's, as has been pointed out in the last couple of days in our discussions, literatures are plenty. They're all over the place. If you go through an airport, you see Hudson's News, and people are buying newspapers and all kinds of stuff, health magazines, mechanics magazines, all kinds, and novels about all kinds of things. What's really interesting is that a lot of people are buying the material that have to do with esoterical things. That's some New Age concepts. You know, those are some of the best-selling books on the list these days. People have an interest in mystery, in what we call achincha, that which you can't always explain, but which is totally relishable and intriguing. And so we have that. We have that material. There are a lot of literatures out there that are popular, that are put on the shelf where children can't see it. As far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure most of you, anything that children cannot be seen by children on the higher shelf should not be seen by anyone. And it's called adult literature or adult material, adult videos, whatever they have. And it's all adult, but I don't think it should be seen by anyone. You know, in fact, it's contributing to the rot. You know, the what Maharaj is reading and stuff. The people are rotting in this world with a lot of these, you know, things that are fueled in people's minds by the rotten literature, stuff that's for the crows. We had a chance to see visually, you know, what some creatures do out there. The lighthouse keepers were telling us that coyotes come out on the spit, you know. A little fawn was devoured, probably by coyotes. There was a seal that came up on the shore, and he just didn't make it. I mean, in terms of living a full life, his skin was there, and there were apertures there, but everything else was taken out by some looters, you know. So there's a lot of rot going on in the world, And it's on the physical level, it's also on the subtle level. Fortunately, we are recipients of the literature that allows us to become clear thinkers. You know, and the term is used here. You are spotless. You know, you can see what we want, to be able to see that which you cannot see with the naked eye, and see that which is beyond. And, you know, you can call it the hand of God, and Srila Prabhupada, some or other, he's always put, it's not a twist. Well, if it is a twist, it's Krishna twisting his hand. It's always Krishna's hand that's behind everything. That's what it means to be Krishna conscious, to be conscious of Krishna in everything. Out of fear of the Lord, the wind blows. Fear of the Lord, the sun shines. So yeah, we have to do that. You have to spend some time outside in order to see those things. And if not, I mean, it's easier to see it outside. One interesting thing that one person told me, you know Abhay, who travels to Lokanath Maharaj, he's done a lot of study on Padyatra, you know, and he's been involved in Padyatra. He did a lot of research on people who did cross-country whatever, you know, travel, foot, cycling, you know, that. And what he captured out of his reading and research, we said, anybody who did those kind of things, they all ended up believing in God. In the beginning, they didn't. But in the end, they did. So it's good to spend a little time outside to see the hand of God. It's a little more difficult to see it inside. Because when you're in close proximity of people, when you're boxed in, people are so complex and psychologically complicated. It's not always, and they're very tricky, and also there's a lot of ulterior motives. It's not always so easy to see. So spend time outside, read these literatures, which really take you beyond outside into another realm, another world. And these are, we were talking to one of the devotees yesterday, these are like brochures, you know, travel brochures. And maybe that's marginalizing the books. But when you have a travel brochure, you see it's usually white sand, palm trees, the perfect man, perfect woman, smiling, looking at each other, and everyone thinks, that's where I want to be. But when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see, you know, much more than that. We see the true perfect man, perfect woman, and we see, we're talking about the Lord and his consort, and we're talking about their world, which is full of, you know, the most perfect things you can have. What's really endearing is the relationships, the interaction between the individuals, and the strong service spirit that's there. Was one of these Athenian scholars who said that behind all knowledge is service. That's the thing. Service is the thing. Devotional service is what is to be had. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the ripened fruit of the Vedic literatures and the masterpiece of Srila Vyasadeva, his great contribution to the world, is a book about service, selfless service, and about all the mystical things that you could ever want to hear about. It's totally entertaining, totally satisfying for the mind, and again, like revolutionary, there to change the world. And everybody here would like to see a different world than the one we see. Things are kind of rotting away. It's a little hard to see out this part of the world, though, where everyone's kind of like backed up on top of each other. And you experiment with rats, and they put them all together in a small little box. They start to do strange things on each other and eating each other. You know, somehow or other, the arrangement is not the best. Focus here is Krishna, and that's, since he's the Supreme Personality, we have the best, despite the fact that maybe not perfect composition is there, perhaps even typographical errors are there. We find occasionally you run into them once in a while. Hey, BBT made a mistake. doesn't matter, you know. It's the message that's important. Message and the mood.
Let's see if there's some discussion.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's more to go.
Maharaj, I'm just happy, blissful there. Mm-hmm. You know, having gone through all these different experiences.
Well, with children, if you observe them, there's always a lot of hope in them. They have hope for the future. And a lot of children are exposed to literatures about animals that are animated. And that's a tradition in India too, Panchatantra literature, Hitopadesh, and other literatures, all about sort of animals interacting with each other. They relate to them very well. Somehow or other, things get shortchanged when they grow up, and they have to start reading something that's literature of another quality. It's very disappointing. And along with that, hope tends to get lost and thrown away somewhere. That's why it's fun to be around kids, because they're always hopeful. When somebody reaches 30, they're just, they've lost all hope. They start to become grumpy old men at a very early age. They're no fun anymore. Maybe we have to get back to the looking at the animals who are like humans.
Correct literature. Mm. That's been going on for the Celestine Prophecy, which was just and I thought that book was so somehow I came across a copy. And I said, okay, I'm gonna read this because all the excitement was about it. And it sold millions of copies. And yet this house was fascinating, millions of people. Whereas quality, something that actually gives an answer.
It seems people are extremely gullible and not thinking to change themselves so much. Want to be a little entertained. A little bubble, forget about their own miseries. And that's what literature do. Films, and, you know, anything in that genre or category.
Self-improvement or ironia.
Yeah, maybe that's how it's marketed. But when you get to the book, like you're saying, perhaps that's not what's coming, that's not the product, you know. Perhaps it's promoted as such, but they're not getting much out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Meaner when there's no meaning. I like that. Well, for sure, if literature is very shallow, if it doesn't allow you to understand more things about yourself and about God, about Krishna, there's definitely a tendency to see the world in that way. That, you know, I need to enjoy, that's a very shallow objective in life. I need to simply enjoy immediately my senses. And yes, you can turn very mean because you're selfish. But that literature which allows you to see dimension, where there's depth, where there's God, there's demigods, there's human beings, there's creatures down here of all different shapes and kinds and colors. Yeah, when you see depth and, you know, when you understand the soul, that there's, like Krishna explains, Indriyani, and he talks about the senses, then there's the mind, and then there's the intelligence, and then the soul, that there's so much depth there that most people don't get exposed to. Yeah, those are the people who become soft and sensitive, whereas those who just are exposed to, you know, very, very, what you see, sir, very shallow kind of literature, very not deep at all. Yeah, they tend to become very, very demented and mean and cruel, because they don't see much. They don't have any vision. Your observation is 100% correct. Yes, spiritual life allows you to see so many things. It allows you to become a more sensitive, caring human being. That's a fact. Though you could maybe, as a suggestion, talk to your friends about, you know, some of the things maybe they're not hearing. There's just good questions. All that good air that went through your head yesterday on the walk to the to the lighthouse. Yeah. We went to the lighthouse yesterday, Maharaj. There was three gentlemen that we met, and one of them had on his T-shirt on the back said, "I've seen the light." And then there was the other fellow, he said, so what religious group are you with? Because some of us were wearing dhotis. And he said, I said, Hare Krishna. Then he responded, well, we used to see you at the airports. Where are you guys been?
Right.
Is that where I decided to go to lighthouses now? So he became enlightened because we joked a little bit. The other guy was enlightened because he saw that seeing the light. And the person who was truly elevated was the guy at the top of the lighthouse who showed us from that bird's eye view what was going on. They're all really nice people. And, you know, what we learned from them is that they were really kind and they were informative and they took quality time with us. Something like
that. Amazon book. I just read that morning's verse on God's mystery novel. From first email.
Those are the kind of books that a DT doesn't want to have to read in school.
He's spending all his time with you in this lighthouse. He spends half a day up there. And he just love morning. It's over. It's
all mystery.
I'm about 17, 18 years old. I mean, Bombay has a 15 or 20 new small new boats, just they have a lot of things. Tons of new springs and have landed in addition to all this night. Now, people are so, you know, interested in so many books, but then as more I sort of speak, most of that thing is so rare. Like O.J. Simpson makes $14 million experience and all that stuff. Functions are there.
They just don't have exposure, it seems. They're just used to their minds becoming scrambled eggs.
The modes of nature are very strong. And don't let go.
They're able to read a lot of transcendental stuff, so a lot of devotees read self-help books, set stuff out of it to bring it to their Krishna consciousness and to help them in their Krishna. So, can you, at a more advanced age, do read?
Yeah, that's probably a good piece of advice, yeah. You know, some of these outside materials could be helpful, complementary in a way, but what you really need is your basis. You need your foundation, which is found in Srila Prabhupada's books. Because without that, you'll miss the boat. You'll drown. And so we need that. You know, we need to understand everything that is being said there, and surely it's been said before that after you've read one of Prabhupada's books, you realize, gee, I have to go back and explore more. You know, that's the nature of the books. And you'll be so pleasantly surprised that I read this before, but I didn't. I missed this point, I missed that point, this point, that point. So it's not like any other literature. So it's the material that you keep going back to again and again and again as a source, you know, for material to help you in life. So I believe that some devotees will do a little digging and researching with other literatures outside of ISKCON, just sometimes to help in their Krishna conscious presentation. And that way it's okay. I mean, even some of us, like myself, I'm a sucker for reading in the newspaper once a week and just seeing. Maybe sometimes the style of writing even kind of helps me out. And, you know, you need to know what's going on in the world. You really need to know who's your president of the United States. You're going to come across as some dodo. And, you know, you need to be a little bit informed, but you don't need to, you know, get, you know, totally immersed in the material. You have to be a little bit aloof at the same time. Think a little bit like a Brahmin. You know, he may, and certainly when it comes to the newspaper, just as an example, you don't really need, you know, just get the headlines, get the caption, read the first two paragraphs, you get it. Okay, I understand. I don't need to dig in to every absolute detail of this material. So it's, maybe you'd like to make a contribution.
Just to add something, I think even senior devotees need to be careful.
Yeah, sure.
About not
I was
going
to say a word of caution.
Yeah, you know, I think we all need to be cautious. And I think we've all seen this where sometimes even older devotees get absorbed in other areas and other ideas and other things. And I think what we have to be very careful, are we using this other information to bring it into our service and using Krishna consciousness, or are we still thinking that there might be something that's more relevant or interesting or whatever it
more
might
complete
be. Yeah. It's like I've I'm a professor of psychology, so I study psychology, but I need to be, I hope I am, 100% convinced that all the answers of life are found in the Srimad Bhagavatam and through the processes of devotional service. So to the degree that I might use some of that other information material, it should be to enhance that, to remove obstacles to advancing in Krishna consciousness and fully taking up the process of Krishna consciousness, never as a substitute or something that would be maybe even superior in some ways. So that's what we have to be a little bit careful about. And that can, you know, and that, well, you know, those karma and jnana are there, you know, as those sort of traps or those, you know, distractions from pure devotional service at all stages up until one is very, very advanced. So it's something we just, yes, we can use these other things, but we have to be real careful and keep them in perspective.
Prabhupada has the phrase, boga books. Meditation boga book. It's quite something unoffered. And also recalling Chad Waitamaraj once, listening to a devotee who was doing some philosophical songs with Western music. And he said, I said, so it sounds like cultural conquest. He said, yes, their culture has conquered ours. So we have to be cautious, as Tamaha Prabhu said. And I appreciated Maharaj's point. First, reading all of Prabhupada's books. That should be a preliminary qualification. If we want to dovetail some of these other things, that's possible after. We've got, read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. We really internalized what Prabhupada's teaching. That if you go fishing and you put your line in the water and you catch a fish and the fish pulls you in, what good is your fishing?
When I was in the devotee group, so many of Prabhupada said stories, but one in this regard, I was told that Prabhupada said reading non-devotional literature is like sitting on a wet park bench that's just been painted. You're not aware when you're sitting on it, but when you walk away, you take some of the paint away with you. And it's on the back, so you don't know, you can't perceive it. So it's a good thing to always remember, what am I coming away with that I'm not aware of? And another thing I would suggest is find an older devotee that you respect and you feel is well situated in their sadhana and devotional service. And then if you read something and there is some question and you do have some doubt or whatever, then you can bring that to them and check it out. But not to just go alone in this forest of, you know, all kinds of ideas.
This just came up in a GBC discussions conference recently. The saying was, Padri Narayan was asking, where did Prabhupada actually say that his literature would be the law books for the next 10,000 years? That was the statement. And Shruti Kirti, who was Prabhupada's assistant or servant for some number of years, cited specific instances when Prabhupada was commenting like that. And then another was Kamal Krishnamurti also reported that Prabhupada had spoken like that to him. That's not in a written form anywhere, but these recent, where did Prabhupada write that? And he said it on several occasions. Your question is, how is it to become established? It's to become established by not just the distribution of literature, but the assimilation of it. A little bit like what we're doing right now, is hearing and Shrinvanti, the verse that we read, Gayanti, Grinanti. So when you get to the Grinanti stage, then it becomes that which governs our life, because we've assimilated it. It's how we lead our lives. Then it's the law book. It's not just something out there, it's something that's in here. Because with with material law, there's a law enforcement agency. Follow the law, because if you don't, you're going to get a ticket or punished. And this is the governance by acceptance of the authority. Understand what it is that Prabhupada is saying, then we'll be happy to follow it. In that way, to imply. I thought of one little Prabhupada morning walk anecdote that I forgot to tell. It's a funny one. The Henry Street Temple had the main entrance, but then there was an equal other entrance that was Prabhupada's, so the double brownstone. And one entrance was, you go in the front door, and you go in from the front door, you're into the temple room, just off to the left is the temple room. On the other side, go into that door, and you enter into the same space, mirror-like same space as the temple room, but it was Prabhupada's quarters on the ground floor, but up like 4 or 5 steps. And then in the back is where Prabhupada's rooms were, and the study, and his so on, where his servants stayed. But when we came back from the morning walk, Prabhupada stopped and took his cane. It was going like this. And then stood up and walked up the steps and into his room. So his servant later asked Prabhupada, what was that about? What were you doing? Prabhupada said there was a ghost and I was shooing him away. Hare Krishna. There were ghosts in that building. I'd like to answer that question. Knowing your nature, don't strive to go further. I mean, some persons, that the answer may be, that's perfectly fine. It would suit your nature. But for your situation, be much. This is my advice or opinion. Focus on your needs are well taken care of. The amount of disposition of service that you have that's part of your nature, far better. And you're very happy to be engaged in direct service to Krishna. So it's certainly a service to A, earn more wealth and give that wealth to Krishna, or B, by position of management leadership in the corporate world to influence other people's towards Krishna. Those are two viable services. However, more valuable is the direct service to Krishna. It depends on the individual in making a statement like that, but in a general sense, just simply serve Krishna directly. And More importantly, is the importance of sadhana. Because the disposition for service that you have will be just gobbled up like anything by the corporate world. There's no end to that treadmill. How fast the treadmill moves, there's no end to it. Get on that faster moving treadmill and it moves faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. And life is meant for other things. Spiritual life is meant. Put the strong foundation of spiritual well-being first. Make that be your next project. Spiritual well-being firmly established over a period of time. And exponentially opportunities for serving Krishna and getting excellent benefit to others who you're serving on the strength of that strong spiritual foundation for a steady period of time. And not that later on, okay, now I can go and do something. That becomes a foundation upon which other powerful services can be built. Arnavas, his example of, he's doing so much service, but how strong is his daily sadhana? How much does he thoroughly understand Prabhupada's books? I mean, look at his Bhagavad Gita. Right? You've seen his Bhagavad Gita? Let your Bhagavad Gita look like that. Let your chanting of the holy name be like his chanting of the holy name. And just for hours he can chant and chant and chant. But he can also do volumes of service. His spiritual foundation, very strong. Very strong. And upon that, so many other services will come.
Consciousness, the pay may not be so good, but the fringe benefits out of this world.
Okay.
The devotees, the visitors.
in the project or what else is happening, he has a collateral damage of that. Humility.
Just get it done. However many people get hurt in the process doesn't matter. Get the job done.
When we have the relationship of the people working to destroy itself, it is.
The end result is the loving relationships.
Right.
That the essence of Krishna consciousness is loving relationships.
No,
the result is the loving relationships, and through the medium of the loving relationships come so many wonderful products. So many wonderful products. Through the medium of them. So it's not disconnected. It's immediately connected. We invest in... And why? Why do we invest in those relationships? Ultimately, because it's pleasing to Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, everything comes. Everything comes. If we just focus on, we want a result, there's, you know, shortages and problems and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's not like, oh, well, at least we got the result. We got the wrong result, which is broken relationships.
Okay. Let me just give an example. When Krishna was with Vow, and then Krishna went away, felt so much separation and they fought their love for Krishna in a way. And at the end, he fulfilled, because they all wanted to be with Krishna first. And Krishna was with all. We're able to work together, coming together, wanting to have Krishna, and then Krishna.
I'm very sorry, just thinking of the end results. I was just a sitting duck. I'm trying to do a service here, but what's going on? I explained to him, you're plump. Think about a relationship. Don't worry about what's happening otherwise. I changed to work on their issues. Now I'm not getting blamed since last 1 or 2 years. Other thing is, many more things I'm able to do, actually. And then I'm, by the way, not doing much. I was learning to do all the things all by myself, getting this done, that one, that. No, I'm just telling them, can you please do this? And they say, sure, but what more? Do you want me to do more? So, that's just my own little realization in the last 3-4 years, that thinking about...
This is in the corporate world.
No, I'm doing it.
At the temple.
In particular, in the temple side.
At the temple, okay.
Yeah, at the temple. Yeah.
The different set of rules.
It's obviously very clear. If some devotees do not turn up in time, and some devotees do not even turn up, but do not come back as they promised in the next meeting.
No. No.
So,
focus on the relationship, and the relationship is not blaming, but you say, when this had happened, this is what I felt. And I value the relationship, so let's talk about. And, you know, this and being on time. You know, if there's somebody that's convening a group of persons, it's part of a good convener's task to remind, especially if the culture is belayed, to remind everybody, our time is very valuable, let's respect one another, and be on time. They'll be 3 minutes early. Or be American, be 7 minutes early. Corporate study that said, Americans, when they have a meeting, they're 7 minutes ahead of time. So because you have something that's important, and everyone's time is important, so you're at the corporate standard, not the other standard. And then, as you very well know, it's like a universal joke, Indian standard time. When we set a time, we want everybody to be there at this time, so we'll say this time, because they won't come at this time, they'll come at that time. Well, that needs to change. If there's someone in a leadership role, not by respect, you know, not in a way that damages the relationship, but the way that strengthens the relationship, because our time is very valuable. And just, whatever others do, just set the standard of being on time. And so your question specifically is, what happens if I'm convening and people are not on time? You respectfully let them, you know, help establish the culture of being on time, strengthen the relationship, because the other is weakening the relationship. I'll just exclude this person because they're not on time. Or they don't perform what they promised they'll do. And that's what will happen over time. Persons will be excluded because they don't perform. what they promise. It's okay to respectfully, help be an agent of establishing the culture of promises you're fulfilling. One devotee, when I was growing up in Krishna consciousness, won't mention his name, said over and over and over, a man is only as good as his word. But, stuck. If you say something, you do it. If you're not sure, then don't say it. But if you say it, you do it. And then, be an instrument, an example, and a voice of let's just have that culture. And it's understandable if something comes up and it can't be done, then you communicate. Something came up and I was unable to do it. But it's not just because...
Times, we have a right wing, left wing, all those things, same line, fine, left wing, right wing. And then, more or less, I find at times...
You answer.
A lot of devotees are hung up on our procedures and processes. I read Bhakti Marg Maharaj's statement when he came to my house. Hey, that's a very Jekhadashi here. We had some discussion. And he said, Marg was such a practical man, it seems that way. you can't do this, you can't touch this with your left hand, or has to be like this, or have to take a bath after doing this, or that. Mataji probably was taking 15 time showers in a Seattle weather. Some fool told her that. What's going on? How do we take this? Some slide off practically in some instances.
Well, Prabhupada was always practical. He preached a high standard, and he expected a high standard from us, but he also was practical in the application. It's like Bhakti Maharaj and I were just talking the other day. We were sort of joking about how now it's like, you have to break Ekadasi between, 7:12 and 8:13, whatever. That's probably very good. I'm sure there's benefit in that, but actually Srila Prabhupada never really introduced these things. Not that I recall. I mean, things were very, in other words, Prabhupada really went for the essence. What is the principle? What is the principle of following Ekadasi, the principle of the next morning breaking, rather than the exact detail? Now, it could be argued that as we advance and mature in Krishna consciousness, we become a little more aware of some of these details. And like even in our deity worship, we've added certain details. Prabhupada gave us fairly simple standards. Deity worship is a good example. Prabhupada emphasized cleanliness, punctuality, and gorgeous decoration. In other words, being very, very punctual to the minute was very important. Very clean was very important. But he really didn't emphasize so many elaborate rituals. A lot of those things actually came later after Srila Prabhupada, some of the additions. What's wrong with that? I think that your question was almost implying the answer.
Yeah.
It needs to be a balance. A practical balance of, I think it was in a bunch of notes at Koru who said that there's principle and then there's the detail. So we want to make sure that the principle is always maintained. The detail may not be as important. Make sure that the principle is there. In other words, there's a principle of cleanliness. You may not need to take 15 showers a day, but there's a general principle of cleanliness when you go on the altar. So a lot of it's just common sense. Thanks.
Once Prabhupada was asked, what's the best way to become, or the quickest way to become Krishna conscious? At one occasion, Prabhupada's answer was, by following all the rules and regulations, even the little ones. The rules and regulations are not there whimsically. The rules and regulations are there, have a purpose. If it's not the essence, but there's a purpose. They enhance the mode of goodness, minimally. And the second comment is, as far as the example that you gave of standards in the home and standards on the altar are different. At a temple, installed deities, just like you have deities in your home, but to be worshipping installed deities, which could be in one's home also, but to worship installed deities, it's another standard. And there's another standard of Radha and Krishna worship. So supposing someone says, oh, so many standards, as the essence is more important. Well, that's not what I understand what Prabhupada gave us with let's say, Radha Krishna deities. It's not, negotiable. There's standards. Now, the comment that Tamahar made, well, there's additional standards, and additional standards are okay. It's not like if someone doesn't do those additional mudras and so many things, then, you know, they're just not up to snuff and it's not, Krishna won't accept their offerings. But on the other hand, just like in the deity worship manual, there's a minimum standard, and then if you want to go up to, you know, all day long, you can just do deity worship. But if you're going to do that, there should be by standard, and here's the standard, here's the standard, here's the standard. Not imaginative. An example of somebody that has an imaginative thing. Long story, but his father died, but he practiced his worship in a certain way, so he does this manasapuja every day along with his chanting. He doesn't have time to complete his chanting, because he does like an hour and a half manasapuja. And he just like pulled out by the ear. So something we just create as a standard, this couldn't be honored, shouldn't be something that's important. But for somebody that wants to follow a particular standard, that's a very elevated standard, that, as long as it's provided it's authorized or authentic standard, and they take it up in the right spirit, the right mood, not just, you know, that's the essence, like a smarta type of approach. The essence is worship, and here's a nice way to offer worship. It's fine. But the essence is driving that detail. I'm a little concerned on the pakoras side of the pizza pakoras issue, that as we go through time, persons that didn't get Prabhupada's training may change, morph a Hare Krishna movement into something we just don't recognize anymore, saying, you know, utility is the principle. Just be practical. We don't need all these standards. I'm concerned about a case in point on cleanliness. I heard from three people who were directly in Prabhupada's association what standard anybody that was around Prabhupada had to perform with cleanliness. And it was extreme. It was a standard that Prabhupada personally kept and expected those who were around him to keep. And it's not like, therefore, anybody that doesn't do that is a dog. But Prabhupada's standard was very high. Very high. I mean, I went to Hari Kesha's room once in Mayapur for some meeting we had to go to, and he said, Hari, but, you know, beverages and anything stays outside. I said, I can't help it. It's the way the Prabhupada, you know, because you drink something, you have to go wash your hands. Or, you know, eat something, and he suggests, please don't bring anything in the room. I can't help it. That's not the way I was trained. I should have brought a practical example. In Europe, some parts of Europe that have this standard, that's not a standard that Prabhupada gave, and that is when the young man and the young woman are engaged, they live together. Still are married, and then they live together. And somebody that was passing through America, taking part in something that I was organizing, said, can I share a room with my fiancé? And I said, I'm sorry, that's not the standard that I was trained with. I understand that it goes on in some other part of the world, but, you know, the balance, but it's not, I'm a little bit on the pakoras side of the pizza pakoras issue.
But then outside, you're talking about left wing, right wing, outside who are not living that stand, not even the principles. So it has to be a respect and always a slyness and compassion that they want come to a higher standard rather than you don't come to the standard, therefore that has to be there. But for ourselves and within the temples, on the standard, have to be inclusive. All devotees at all levels of devotional service.
So, from you who are coming to temple, but you know, it's not a, what do you call, a fight or anything, but
tension.
And I see that in our Siddhartha temple quite a bit. Not initiated in April, so now he's aware of the pains. But I personally really don't have any problem with one way or other. But it's not to be more mature in stand away than in Zenon. It's sufferers. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know what's the right word is, because the time we have is
samsara.
Like last week or 2 weeks ago, somebody, now, this person does not know anything. So, I mean, you know, respectfully, I said, well, you can come and help. However, you cannot eat on your. But they say, oh, we can't do all this. So, I mean, they understood right away. We didn't sacrifice. But the thing is, ask them to come and do, let's say, a dishwash, you know, pot cleaning. And but sometimes they want to do other things, and then it becomes an issue.
When it comes to, well, I think you were really brought up a few different points about someone who's got diksha and some arrogance.
Yes.
So, just to deal with that point, diksha is not a license for being arrogant or proud. That's not what it is. It's supposed to be the opposite. That you're being initiated into a devotional service movement. So our objective should be to be the number one service-oriented operation in the whole world. So that means that you must, by humility, you know, be very hospitable, accommodating, friendly, smile, and, you know, all those things that are totally sattvic, and perhaps more than sattvic, but in the mode of goodness. Now, that's what you're doing. I mean, perhaps, you know, a little hospitality training wouldn't be bad for someone who's getting initiated. You know, knowing how to deal with the public. Because now you are becoming a bona fide representative of a great tradition. And you should be ready to deal with people now. You've got, you know, a feather on your cap. You've got a medal or whatever you want to call it because you're initiated. And therefore you're in a little bit of position of authority, more so than before. And people come to you for some, you know, level of enlightenment and encouragement. So we have to, you know, handle them very, very carefully and just, you know, kind of kill them with kindness. That's really the best thing. Yeah, kill them with kindness. And, you know, be very gentle. And, you know, you be more of a gentleman. Prabhupada always hit home on that. Be a gentleman, you know. And don't be an arrogant bastard. We say that because that's oftentimes what happens. Maharaj was talking about smarta brahmas, you know, rules and regulations kind of person, but you know, you can forget about the principles. Again, it's humility that must be expressed. Remember, whether you're a Brahmin or not, string it around, you know, choke yourself with it if you have to. You know, just get it right. Get it. That simply means, you know, humility has to be expressed more than above anything matter, you know, once you're initiated. And as far as other things that people like to come and do, decorating the temple, and yet they eat onions, I don't know. I would certainly say, come on, you eat onions, come on, let's put the decorations up. We need to get too close to the person, maybe. But, I mean, yeah, let's be a little bit accommodating. Let's be accommodating, let's be very open, extremely welcoming, and, you know, in time, the person will understand. People will come to, they join religions, not so much for philosophy, or the rules or regulations. They come more because they come for security reasons. They feel stable. They emphasize family, caring, kindness. That's why they join. It's not the philosophy. So, you know, we hope that they will become enlightened and learn the books and so on. And, you know, that will come in time. But basically, you want to put a good presentation before you, right from the very beginning. So we do need to step up our greeting of our guests and maintaining them well and knowing how to answer the phone and even answer it and you know, take care of those very basic things that make it comfortable for people. We want them to have a good experience from the day that they first enter to, you know, they go into the box.
as we say.
I was thinking about their Latin temple, missing Prabhupada, for example. This is Prabhupada, just getting a guess, and Prabhupada's very merciful.
Of course, even then, I think, my wife takes care of Prabhupada there. Mm-hmm. This is the mm-hmm. chanting some rounds or something.
Yes, to address Prabhupada,
you have to chant. So, yes, certainly a more lenient standard, but still some standard is there. But that is a good point. We really do need to be able to help, and everybody needs to be able to be engaged with us. Of course, there were, in none of Sutta's question, there were about 8 questions there, so we were trying to sort of separate them all out. I think one thing you were implying was a little bit, there's an issue that we probably face everywhere. Sometimes when particularly our Indian friends come and they do start doing service, sometimes they want to do other services, which we may have a Brahmin standard or things like that. Obviously, we have to maintain those standards. You know, as far as directly cooking, you know, for the deity, those things we have to maintain, and I think you know how to explain those things nicely to people. And I think people can understand. You know, there's always certain priests and any group that do, and that's to encourage them to do other services that they can do.
To really assimilate the philosophy, grananti, that's the word, right, Mara?
Yeah.
Nitty grananti. You know, getting to the nitty grananti means to really, you know, embrace what is there in the books and put them into action. Really express it. And what I've been hearing here this morning is that what's most important is establishing the loving relationships. The most important thing that you have to achieve. So you do whatever it takes to get there. All maintaining standards, you know, lenient for this, less lenient for that, etc., etc. If you're initiated, you must know some of those things. Some of them.
Tommy writes, in regard to principles and details, yena-tena, or rather think of Krishna. The principle is to think about Krishna somehow. Science is the rule of the
Bogarts.
Yeah, I'm talking about reading. So we get for an hour and a half, and welcome. It's going to be nice to show them. That's tomorrow morning, about 3 hours before we arrive.
Would it be a good idea to be there at 10 o'clock in the cottages and start packing up?
We should have sent us a little kirtan before. Okay, then kirtan after breakfast. Okay.
Try to keep a little separation between breakfast and lunch, and they're not too tight, close together.
Yeah, I don't want to.